David.
What's up, Kevin?
Yo, we're going to introduce this new shorts segment of the pod, of the corner store.
Shorts.
Yeah, it's like a micro, mini corner store.
Yes.
Something like that.
And this mini mart.
A mini mart. Yo, mini mart.
At the top, we got a mini mart.
I'm with it. and we want to do this in part because there's so many incredibly talented people that we have the privilege to know in the city of Chicago. And part of what is happening is people are putting on incredible products and going on tour and projects.
Especially summertime.
Summertime mm-hmm. is filled with this. And so we want to give some space for people to also talk about stuff that's coming out now. And they'll do like a mini mart, and then maybe we'll get them on later for the longer conversation.
You get the whole store later.
That's right. But for now, we want to introduce one of, honestly, the city is filled with talented people, but this is a illustrious.
I say that every time.
Award-winning. Patricia Frazier is many things. She is an organizer. Sada's Daughters is in the building. She is the second ever Chicago Youth Poet Laureate, the first ever National Youth Poet Laureate from the city of Chicago. The current crown is
rap
on top of her head.
Noise.
her first chapbook ever is coming into the world as we speak. It's called Graphite. To talk with us live in the corner store, Patricia Frazier.
Hello. Thank y'all for having me.
You look so cute.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank y'all for having me.
We do have some snacks for you, some gifts.
Even in the mini mart.
The mini mart has sometimes the best.
I was going to say that.
You know? Yeah. The best selections.
So first of all, we do have some ginger ale just out the gate for you that hopefully your neighbor will share with you. Thank you. In addition to the ginger ale, how do you feel about some extra flaming hot crunchy Cheetos?
Extra flaming hot.
Yeah,
I think I can handle the extra.
Okay, I'm gonna pass it around the table to you.
Flaming hot. So
and then these took me back. I hope you enjoy these. I'm just my diet is such where I don't think I could enjoy these anymore. But as a Ute, I enjoyed the Hostess cupcakes, and so this is with like the Charlie Brown swirl.
My grandpa always gets me these.
Oh, for real?
Yes.
See, I'm kind of like your grandpa. I feel so
almost
okay.
I mean, you everyone's grandpa and uncle.
All right, I set myself
and
up.
And brother and dad and not friend, never friend,
never friend.
Mentor.
Yo,
I think you're only my friend. Everyone else, you're like their grandpa, uncle, dad.
Oh, see, sweet. Thank you. Yeah, that was really sweet. Thank you, Tara.
I didn't mean for that to be sweet.
I know
sweet.
You didn't. It slipped out. But I appreciate it. Patricia, welcome. And, there's so many things to talk about. But, why don't we start just talking about this? Why don't we actually start with being crowned the National Youth Poet Laureate, because we'll talk about the book, but that's such a significant
also Chicago,
right? Yeah, Chicago first, and mm-hmm. then and then national. So what does it mean for you first and foremost to be the Chicago Youth Poet Laureate?
First of all, thank you for that question, because people are always like, how do you feel? And that's a harder question to answer than like, what does it mean, right? I think for me, it means a lot because of my identity. Like, when I'm a black girl, like, I'm rooting for everybody black. I'm a girl. I am, like, debating gender. I am, like, questioning what gender means to me. I'm a queer woman. Also, like, I'm from the projects. I'm a project. I'm not going to say the next word. But, like,
you can say whatever you want, by the way.
You
can cuss up and down.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm a project bitch. Like,
hey.
So, like, it means a lot for me to put on for all of those people that also identify with all of those different identities, right? As, like, somebody on a national scale, I still don't know, like, what that means to me individually. But I know that all of those identities are now, like, on the same platform I'm on, right? Like, the Wells is no longer just something that was here once before and people just kind of forgot about it, because I'm always going to talk about the Wells, right? So I'm just very, very, very lucky to, like, be able to put on for all of these people and all of these identities. And I'm just hoping that I make Chicago proud. That's what I'm trying to do.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, you do.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Wells, because this is, one of the things about this city and one of the things about whiteness is that, it roots itself in that practice of erasure and mm-hmm. amnesia. And right. so, you know, for those that don't know, can you tell us a little about the Wells Homes?
Yeah, so the Ida B. Wells Homes were a project in Bronzeville. I lived on 35th and Browning, 511 was my building. And I lived there until I was 9 years old. When I was nine, the buildings were torn down, and me and my family were forced to relocate to Englewood. But in my book, I'm reinvestigating and revisiting my childhood, partly because, one, most of my childhood was given to me through stories, right? I always talk about how when I lived in the Wells, it wasn't until like I was 8 or 9 that I started going outside because I was so afraid, just because everything I knew about my block was told to me on a TV screen. So a lot of my childhood was spent at home reading books, like writing, collecting myself, and like figuring out how to be who I was in that state, in that area. And I think a lot of that is one, like a lot of my writing is one, like aimed at girls who may be in that same situation, like scared of the places where they live, or like scared to claim and like be from the places they live. I remember like in middle school, people who lived like maybe across the street from me would bully me for being from the Wells. And that was something I would always just be apprehensive about and kind of just scoot out of the conversation. And I never protected and stood up for that hood. So I think I'm trying to do a lot of that work now, especially like, again, for the people who live in hoods like that, who are ashamed of where they come from and need to know that nobody's going to put on for your neighborhood if you don't do that, right? And that's why our blocks, our homes continue to get taken away from us in these ludicrous and violent ways. And that's why after I left Englewood, like I had to leave Englewood too, because like we can see that is also another neighborhood that's being gentrified. And as a result of it, the people that come from these communities are pushed further and further south. And maybe until we get into suburbia, and we'll see what that's like for, you know, black and brown folk. But
well, of course, we see that happening. Right, people have been pushed to the west and south subs.
Right. That's because they mostly tore down most of the public housing, right?
And displaced thousands of people. Yep. And so,
still exist.
There are some homes that still exist, but the ways, Cabrini-Green homes, there's still people living there.
But those are the lower ones.
There are,
right?
Yeah. But the high rise, skyscraper, what came to be known as housing projects, from the city's skyline have predominantly been erased. I mean, you know, there was the tear down that began in the 80s and kind of, you know, happened through the aughts. I mean, right. That was a process of the erasure of public housing in some ways, the idea of public housing in the city of Chicago, you know?
Yeah. I hear a lot about Cabrini Green getting tore down, and I guess that's like a historic kind of happening or whatever.
Absolutely. And I think like in some ways like that was the, at least, you know, the last towers in the green when they went down, in some ways I think was the gravestone or the grave marker for public housing in Chicago in a lot of ways. There was an artist, Jan Tichy, who, you know, put like a light exhibition as they were tearing it down, and it was like sad and stunning and horrible. But yeah, there's a lot of documentation about the green, and in some ways not a lot of documentation about the Ida B. Wells Homes, which is part of the reason why your book is so important.
Yeah, actually, I have to find the name of this book because I always bring it up and I never know the name, but I actually read a book in middle school that was about the Wells, and it was written by my father's friends. And it was like some media company from downtown like just hired them to or drafted them like to just tell, like, record themselves like living in the hood and like living in the Wells, and that became a book. And that was really important for me, one, to read in my middle school. I was in the middle school on the west side, where a lot of people already had their prejudices about what it's like to grow up on the south side, right? So like, one, to have them have that story in their hands, but also for me to have that story told to me, because again, like I said, a lot of my childhood is from retelling, right? And a lot of my childhood is from stories I've picked up. So I definitely think that's like something that inspired me even more, like to really get this book out and push it to like be heard.
That's my question. What kind of prompted you to, you know, have that be the topic of your first book?
Well, I think a lot of it came out of like the sad convenience of my grandmother passing away around the same time that I was being named Chicago's Youth Poet Laureate. So I was sitting in a lot of that feeling of like her sort of being one, a matriarch of what my childhood was like, because she basically raised me. My mom was a teenage mom, and a lot of that was like my mom in school, me at home with grandma. And two, recognizing that her loss also signified like the final closing of the casket on the world's two, realizing that her loss also signified like the final closing on the casket of my childhood home, because a lot of the stories that I got were from her. And actually, like Kevin, like at Iman's, the first Chicago Youth Poet Laureate, at her book release, Kevin was like saying like, oh, like maybe this is something you can start investigating, right? Like, and I think it was a really good thing for me to do, because I'm not only investigating that childhood, but I'm investigating loss, and I'm investigating grief, and I'm investigating how that can be reborn into better things like joy and celebration of these places we come from and what they've made us. So
that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Who were the other storytellers? You said, you know, you're kind of a child of stories. And so in addition to your grandma, who are some of the other storytellers in your life?
I definitely think I've lived in a bunch of communities, very close-knit communities, so a lot of my stories will come from neighbors, family, friends, but most of them from my grandmothers, both on my mom and my dad's side. And my mother, in a lot of her free time, was always just telling me these outrageous stories, some fictional and some not. And now I'm learning, like, why some stories had to be fictional, like what my cousins was really doing and why my cousins really got so much money now that I couldn't know when I was,
listen, allegedly
10 years old. Right. Allegedly. Right. Like, yeah. Allegedly.
You would ask questions and she would just like tell you something.
Yeah. I would either ask a question, but my mom is like really into talking about her past and not in a bad way at all, but just like, I like hearing those stories about the past, mostly because I'm like, ooh, I could write some poems about this.
That's like go ahead.
Huh?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
But yeah, she just likes telling stories about her past. So she'll start talking and I'll be like, all right, I guess I'm listening now. But like as I've gotten older, it has like transformed into that questioning. Like first, just so I can get inspiration for my book. But then like, because my childhood had a lot of interesting and bizarre and odd happenings that I never would have imagined happened on that small, tiny block with just like niggas from the hood hanging out drinking 40s, like so like also like thinking of in the future, maybe when I get older, writing like a science fiction book inspired by the Wells and yeah. Like,
oh, that's dope.
What happened. I think that would be so dope. Yeah. I don't think I'm ready yet, but I think that would be dope.
No, but shit, isn't that where like all stories come from, is like dudes around the corner drinking 40, like in some ways like that is where the history is kept. I mean, it's like the right. Beauty salon, the barbershop, the corner, right. Yeah, the oral historian. Yeah, oral. Like I love a good oral historian, right? Like those, that's who keeps the culture, who keeps the narrative.
And that's the best part of family. It's like sometimes you don't even need TV because they just be telling you shit.
True.
Yes.
From the past and like life, like a life that you'll never see, you
yeah.
know, a time you'll never see.
Facts.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess from that, I mean, what was the process of you beginning to then write? You know, just back in the day, how soon did that from listening to your own writing, when did that take place?
I think for me it was first getting one, like the hardest poem out, and for a lot of time I was like pushing myself, like, oh, you gotta start working on this book, like, oh, you gotta get more than ideas out, like you gotta get more than just shitty little drafts of poems out. And the first thing that actually pushed me was a screenwriting class, like where they asked us to write a scene, and I couldn't like write a scene because I was too in the memory of my grandmother, because the day before I had like a trigger of her. And so
this is at Columbia College.
Yeah, this is
where
at Columbia,
you are a student in
am.
Film and yes. television.
Yep.
Going into your second year.
Yep. Right. Catch me on my screenwriting tip. But anyway, my scene turned out to be a poem just about my grandmother's passing, and that scene was kind of like the jump off for reimagining, because it was after Eve Ewing, and in her book Electric Arches, she does a lot of reimagining poems where she'll start off with the true story, and then in her real handwriting is like either what she wished would have happened or like what happened in her 5-year-old mind. And so I did that with my grandma's death, like, oh, this is the when I got the call, but this is what I wished would have actually happened. And I think a lot of my poems sort of started to spawn into that. Like, I have a poem in there where I'm telling the story of me and my cousins just hanging out at the park, but it's about Dorothy from the Wizard, from the Wiz, like, and her finding her way home, and how does she find her way home if she leaves and she comes back and it's not there anymore? What does that mean? And I think that ultimately just made the poems a lot easier to write for me. One, because it's fun to like just make up stories and reimagine stuff, but also because it made a lot of the, it took a lot of the heavy lifting of like dealing with the fact that I could not remember so much, or that I just had little small memories of home. It was just like my validation, like, hey, this is your story. And even if you like recreate or give it a new character or give it a new twist or give it a new spin, like the lesson that you learned at the end of the day is still there. And that's still what people need to get from it. So.
Dope.
Yeah.
There are other themes, of course, in the book. I mean, and you know, you said up top that you are someone who is wrestling with gender, who is, you know, who is queer. That certainly comes through in the telling in Graphite. How difficult have those poems been for you to compose?
I actually think that my poems about queerness, there are only probably like two or three, but those were probably the easiest to push out. And I think that sort of speaks to the rebirth part, like the who can you become after? Like I said, or I didn't say, but I say a lot, like my grandmother was a product of Mississippi and was a product of a lot of toxic ideas from the past that she needed to hold on to survive. So a lot of my life was hiding what I felt from her, or hiding who I was from her, or who I wanted to date. And I think after that passing, it was so much easier for me to just be like, all right, well, at least now I can bring a girl home, maybe, or like at least I'll get a reaction that's not just like they need to leave, right? And so I definitely am rocking with those poems now, because not only have they just like lifted this weight off my shoulder, but also I'm realizing that in a lot of ways, since I finished that book and since I pushed those poems out, I feel more free. Especially just to investigate not only my sexuality, not only like what queer means in the terms of like, am I a lesbian? Am I bisexual? Am I poly? But also like, what is my gender? Like, I want to be called she, her, but also sometimes I don't feel like a girl. And I think now I feel way more free to like investigate my gender expression and how I dress. And I feel more comfortable, like if my friends joke that I'm dressing like a dyke or like butch, 'cause I'm like, yeah, I am. Like, you're right, nigga. Like, so that just feels really, really good. Like, this after and this, like, okay, now you can start finding out who you are. And now you can start being that person, which is still really scary. Like, I was just telling you, I'm afraid what happens when my other grandma reads the book, right? Like, but also I realize the privilege that I have, not only being the National Youth Poet Laureate, but knowing that my family is still going to love me regardless, like, in a world where 40% of homeless youth are queer. And that's just something I want to get out there and investigate in further collections, maybe.
You know, so the title, National Youth Poet Laureate, is very elaborate. That's a
prestigious.
Fucking, yeah, that's a prestigious-ass title.
Yeah.
How does one become the National Youth Poet Laureate?
Also, and, what does it entail?
Yeah, do you get like a bag? You get like a Rolls Royce?
Right, you get like a
fine
medal?
Quill?
Oh, no,
like
bag. I'm broke.
like a monocle?
No, I don't get anything.
Yeah, like a nice beret.
Like you have to dress
an embroidered beret.
Wait, what's the one? The sash?
Sash. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Maybe no. Like a crown.
I think.
Maybe like a metaphysical one, maybe a metaphorical one, like
a metaphysical, yeah. Metaphysical.
My crown on my head all the time, but it's invisible.
Oof.
No, truly, like I'm gonna be honest with y'all, just because I rock with y'all and like I feel like it's not like other places where I'm like, oh, I just met you. It really don't mean shit.
Okay.
Really.
Keeping it 100, yes. Okay.
Keeping it 100. My life has changed a lot just because of the platform and like the fact that I know a lot more people are listening to my voice now. But I know these same people still aren't reading my poems and
about to be with this new collection.
Maybe about
you know
to be,
saying?
Hopefully,
drop
by
it
my
in the world. Hey, Market Books.
Yeah, but I think
it's under your imprint.
It's, you know, with, yeah, we're all
okay.
One big family.
It's family.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
True Haymarket gang. Yeah. But I think ultimately, like I said, it's just really the platform and like the fact that I get to put on for all these identities. I do get like perks, and like I get to travel, and I'm definitely getting so many people like hitting up my website or emailing me and booking me for gigs. Like, it's great for my my career as a freelance artist. But other than that,
okay. Well, let's help add to that real quick. First of all, so the book comes out September 1st.
Yes,
there is a release party.
LYCA.
Tell us a little about that.
It's at 7. It's free. There will be soul food cooked by my mama. Also, wow. My mama will be accompanying me on my read with some viola in the background. Right. Yeah. So
okay.
Your mom's a musician.
Yes,
that's right.
My mom's a musician. So it's going to be dope. Please come. Please buy my book.
On September 7th.
September 1st.
September 1st. And then the book will be available where? Haymarket Books.
Haymarket. I don't know yet.
Chicago bookstores.
Chicago bookstores. My house. Hit me up. Email me.
My
I'll
house.
Send you some.
Don't come to my house.
Yeah, I'll ship them to you.
Right, you're right.
And then I saw, you know, just I don't know, in the last day or two, you put something out about your fall schedule, your fall tour.
Yes. If you hit up my Twitter, Hakuna Matitties, or my Instagram, I have a bunch of events that I am performing at that you can come see me at if you don't plan on coming to my book release, or if you do and you just want to see me read more.
And also, okay, still
but,
booking.
But yeah. Run that back. Hakuna Matitties.
Spell that for the people. Yes. So this is where people could find you on the Interconnected Network.
So actually, I spelled titties wrong. Don't judge me. But it's HAKUNAMATTITIES.
So you spelled it wrong on purpose, or you was just in a rush?
Yeah, I spell it wrong on purpose.
we'll say one of these things.
You could always unspell it wrong, or it's
you're
everywhere.
Right. I've never actually thought of that, but yeah, you're right.
And you're booking for the fall, and people could find you and bring you out to their campus, and certainly this collection, Graphite, is stunning, and as a first body of work into the world, it's quite a contribution. We're so excited for you, so excited for what the future holds, and many books to come, many films to come. Please, y'all, make sure you rock with Patricia Frazier. Thank you for being on the Corner Store this evening. Appreciate you.
Hey, Kevin.
Tara.
What's good?
It's so nice to see you again.
I know. It's been a minute.
Yeah.
And I saw you.
I've been seeing you, but I mean, it's nice to see you again. I do, you know, before we introduce our guest, who I'm really excited to talk with, there's so many things happening.
Also, we're in a larger spaceship that's not pocket-sized.
Thankfully.
Yeah, it's nice.
This is reminiscent of the earlier spaceship, but
it's higher.
Truthfully, we have a much more beautiful view.
Okay, yeah, we could see the river.
Right. Yeah.
Can I see the Apple Store? I can see the Apple Store. Hey, Nora.
Speaking of the Apple Store, yeah. there's a big music summit coming to Chicago. Can you not say why?
I don't know. Maybe not yet.
Okay. But you're involved with it. Yes. And it's forthcoming is my point.
It's forthcoming.
But you've been very busy.
Yes.
And I'm excited. We have a lot of great things coming up with the podcast.
Yes.
By the time this airs, we will have already done our live set.
With my fave.
Yeah.
Queen Key.
Mm-hmm. But more live shit to come.
Yes.
And speaking of live shit, our guest tonight is extremely live. thanks. Do you
can't help but be corny just a little bit.
A little bit.
It comes
with
age,
I think. Exactly. You just kind of like
and Kevin is very grown
into the dad jokes. I don't know how to describe
multi-talented.
Yeah, no, multi-talented. The music, though, specific. I was listening today.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of like dream pop, hip hop, jazz. And there's something that like is borrowed from so many traditions that it makes for something incredibly new that is so exciting. And this record, this last record, Cannonball, is such a growth from the first project. But this young man is also not only blowing up in the city of Chicago, but literally is one of the only people who I think I could say like is actually, I think, getting famous in Japan. I've heard a lot of rappers over the years say like, oh, no, bro, like, but I'm big in Japan. But I think for this young man, a forthcoming trip, and I think a lot of love from that country, Our guest,
where he's also from.
True.
Yes.
Our guest in the corner store this evening is none other than Sen Morimoto. Sen, what's up, man?
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Thank you so much. You were all saying such nice things, and I wasn't sure if I was allowed to talk yet. I was like,
no, no.
thank you.
You're great. It's great when the guest just lets us riff a little.
Yeah.
But you came in at the right time. And welcome back. Welcome back home.
Thank you.
Yeah, you took a train.
I took a train. I took a long ass train. Can I say it?
Yeah,
you could.
I took a long ass fucking train. No. Oh my fucking God.
Wow.
By yourself.
By myself, yeah. I sat next to this dude on the way back just now who seemed chill the most of the ride. He was like talking about Star Wars and stuff, and I was like, he's a nice guy. And then I fell asleep, and like while I was like half asleep, I could hear him saying like, I blame this train delay on like the Chinese because they built the I don't even know. He went off, and I was like, man,
was
I can't
really
even
old?
No, it was he was like my age.
Oh, weird.
And I was like, this is crazy. There's like kids out here are very problematic and bad. I don't know.
He was a white gentleman.
Oh yes, he was quite Caucasian.
Yes
He's blaming it on the Chinese. You should need to blame it on the freight trains who carry all the coal and shit.
Exactly. Yeah, they are the ones who own the rails. Well, welcome back. Maybe we will talk a little about your trip and certainly where you're from. But before we do,
yes,
we do have
gifts.
Some gifts for
welcome,
you.
Welcoming gifts to the corner store.
And these gifts come via a little bit of investigation. There is in the spaceship tonight. We also have a guest and
another illustrious guest.
An illustrious guest
sitting in the corner
and an informant
of the corner store.
Yeah. And an informant. She put us on to some of what you might like. And
oh
so
my God.
You know, to begin with. We have for you some...
Oh, no, you didn't get the munchies.
Cheesy munchies.
Oh,
yes.
My God.
Cheesy munchies.
Those are my
yours.
God.
Okay,
yes.
There you go. Hope you enjoy those.
I'm so hungry. I didn't eat on the train. I'm going to eat these right now.
Please do. Yeah, and we love sound effects at the corner store.
Oh, my God.
Yes, we do.
We also have Tara, you know the name of this.
Yes, the Ferrero Rocher.
Oh, my God, okay. My favorite chocolates.
Okay.
Oh,
so, and Kevin was like the Ferrero. No, you didn't even
I
say it right. That was way too right.
I called them like Rochambeau. I didn't know.
The Ferrari Roaches.
The Ferrari
These are
Roaches.
So good. Ooh. Oh, my God.
The Ferrari Roaches.
And then we also have some ginger ale for you.
Oh, wow.
Wink.
I've been drinking water this whole time.
Okay, yeah, well.
With some okay. My advanced palate
okay.
can hopefully, tell this is 1800.
hopefully very soon, Tara Mahadevian, we will have a really terrific sponsor who will help us enjoy beverages
yes.
on this show.
But
until then.
We can do some little, you know, advertisements.
Eventually.
Stuff.
Eventually.
Maybe.
But let them cut the check before we do that.
All right, fair. Fair.
But yeah, please send. Feel free to eat. Feel free to share. Kaina, thank you for the information.
Wow.
And for being here.
Shout out, Kaina.
Yeah, for sure. But Sen, you do not come from the city of Chicago.
I don't. No.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, this
not fine.
Shame.
God. Yeah, shame.
No, the way you said it. Maybe it's the way I said it. That's just my disposition. But yeah, so you come from where?
I grew up in Massachusetts. I was born in Kyoto, Japan. I lived there just briefly as a baby, and then I grew up in the States, and I would kind of go when I turned 6 and my dad kind of realized that I was not speaking Japanese, which is a problem because he doesn't really speak a ton of English. And I was going to Japanese school every Saturday, and eventually they were like, look, man, your kid is like, you know, something's missing, or he just doesn't understand the language. And so my dad took me back to Japan just to kind of immerse me in the culture there and kind of get a grasp of the language a little bit. And it actually worked really well. And when I came back, I could speak, and it was like such a night and day difference that he decided to take me back once a year. And so I've been going back and forth since then.
So like in the summertime you went?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
The summer is hot. We did a couple summers, we were like, no, that's not happening. So
I just don't imagine Japan being hot or
it's
cold,
weird, right?
Just always fall because the fits
are
so fly.
Always just like temperate.
Yeah. Oh, you could always rock a light jacket.
Yeah,
I feel like,
yeah.
But
because I saw
there,
Jamila's
so.
Instagram story, it was like snowing one time.
Oh, true.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Yeah, no, Tokyo gets hot. It was like the first time I went back to Japan. It was summer, and I just sat in front of my grandma's AC like 24 hours. My dad was like, this is really bad for you.
That's fair.
Now I'd have no AC.
So why did your folks move from Japan to Massachusetts?
I don't even know. They had been moving back and forth between the States and Japan. They met in San Francisco, and then they met in San Francisco, and I think from what I understand, didn't really like each other that much, and then bumped into each other in Kyoto like years later, and got together, and they had my siblings in Japan, and then they moved to El Paso in Texas. They were basically just like driving around the country, ending up in different spots, kind of like with some hippie friends of theirs, and then ended up moving back to Japan to send my brother to elementary school when he started. And so that's when they had me back in Japan, and then like a little over a year later, we moved back to the States.
Yeah.
They're just driving around.
I know.
And like, finding cities to live in.
Yeah.
What were they doing?
I don't even... Every time I talk to my dad, he like unveils a new chapter of this story. Like he's never told... Like he's just like...
I feel like that... What years are is this?
This is like in the 80s.
Okay.
Oh, it's a little past like...
Yeah, the, I mean, like they, hippie. Yeah. Like, it wasn't yeah. like an acid think, bus. It was maybe like a bus of cocaine
No, he definitely, when they met in San Francisco at first, it was a little more like, 70s style.
Yeah.
They're
holding on to the free love, you know?
Yeah, he likes to tell me about how he arrived and the people in the elevator that brought him to his first apartment gave him a tab of acid and he like woke up on the boardwalk in like roller skates or something.
Let's
go.
Wow.
Welcome to
he
America.
He was just like, I'm going to take this acid that a stranger gave.
Well, I think he's just like, I don't know what this is.
Right.
Like, this
it's
is
a
probably
sticker
fun.
On my tongue. What's the worst that can happen?
Right.
Well,
yeah. Well, what do they do, your folks?
My dad does shiatsu massage. And so he has clients come to their house in Wendell. It's like, Wendell is the town I grew up in Massachusetts. It's like tiny, maybe it's less than 1,000 people live there. And most of them are kind of reclusive, just kind of like retired hippies, and so people come drive out to the woods. It's in a state forest, and he's the man. He's like a magical massage therapist, and he's very generous, which is something I like about his business, that he's like, it's really cheap, and he's very like anti charging a lot of money for it, which is something I respect about him. And then my mother is a nurse at the local hospital, and she does childbirth like nursing work, which is also really crazy and beautiful work. So basically I feel stupid for making music.
Well, your music is very brilliant, so you should not. But
interesting though.
I know, right? And also Wendell, Massachusetts.
How far is it from Boston?
Like an hour and a half.
Did you go to Boston a lot?
When I was a teenager, yeah, I started going because we were like, oh, something must be happening out there in Boston.
Right.
Nothing's happening out there in Boston.
Shots
no shade to Boston.
How do you feel about Boston?
I think there are mixed feelings about Boston. I've had some really great experiences in Boston, but
it has really great rap.
It does have great hip hop,
but
and
other
also
than that,
a lot of racism. But
yes,
yeah,
that's what I was
but it's
say,
also
yeah.
America, it's, and everywhere in America has a lot of racism.
Right, maybe it's just more apparent there.
Yeah, maybe. I think the whites
white.
Are a little more emboldened.
Yeah, they're very vocal.
Yes, yes,
are they
like to
vocal
let you know.
Whites.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Vocal whites, my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a lot.
One of the most frightening things on the planet. You have older siblings.
I do. Yeah.
Are you the youngest?
I am. Yeah.
Okay.
My sister is 7 years older than me, and my brother is 9 years older than me.
Oh, wow.
And we're kind of spread out. My sister lives on Maui, and my brother lives in Kyoto, where we were all born. And my folks still live in Massachusetts, so that's why I was on the train. We make a solid effort to see each other as much as we can. But
I
it's
feel
like
you have to with that much difference, distance.
Yeah, for sure. It takes a lot of organizing. Luckily, my mom is pretty good at that.
What do your siblings do?
My sister does massage, too, and my brother is a filmmaker in Japan, and he does, like, a lot of different freelance work while he's making his own projects, too.
Your family's cool.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Well, that sounds like a pretty unique experience growing up in a town with 1,000 or less.
Yeah, probably, like, 800 people. It's, like, really tiny.
And then, I mean, I don't know the demographics of Wendell, but
You can assume.
I wonder how many Japanese families are you know, hanging out in Wendell, Massachusetts.
Yeah, no, actually, I think if you go to the Wikipedia, there's like a percentage, which is like only my family. It's like 0.02 or something. It's like Asian American population.
Right.
And what was it about Wendell that they...
I know they had a couple friends that had kind of started to settle down there from El Paso, and it's a really, I mean, it's a beautiful area. I think they picked a good spot. I'm very grateful for that kind of place to grow up in. But I think it was just kind of, they're both very, they go with the flow, as they say.
Well, what was it like growing up there? Particularly, you were younger and your siblings were...
Not, you know, in the house, right?
Right, exactly.
Basically almost, out the house.
Almost like a single kid type of experience.
Totally, yeah.
Being in what I imagine is like a lot of trees.
Yeah.
And maybe some...
You can't see the...
I can tell you've been to the
tree. Maybe some natural rock formations.
You know your shit.
Yeah.
That's exactly
what
like.
They look like, too.
You know,
like,
you just reach out and touch the trees.
Yeah. I'm not a cartographer.
I just feel like there are a lot of mushrooms.
There are mushrooms, kinds, yeah. There was definitely, there was a group of kids at my elementary school who were really into finding mushrooms and identifying mushrooms that you could eat. And then later, the other kind of mushrooms
that you could eat. Yeah.
That you can eat.
And that are poisonous, but... You know, maybe you have a good time.
Right.
Maybe you don't. I don't know.
You definitely have a good time.
Let's clear that right up. Spell any rumors.
But yeah, I'm sorry. You were saying that it's...
No, so yeah, just what was it like growing up there?
In trees.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. Like, lonely at times. I think just made a lot of friends with trees. My first girlfriend was a tree. There's like... yeah, definitely a specific kind of bond you make with nature, especially if you're not kind of like hanging with your siblings. Like, I had a best friend who lived through the woods, and so there was like, I would walk through the woods to get to his house.
That sounds scary.
It was scary sometimes. When it got late, there'd be like barbed wire. If you went like off the path a little bit, which like somehow you always did, there would just be areas you had never seen before. And like I remember there's this like rock in between our two houses that I would end up at if I was lost, but like only if I was lost. And it's this huge rock, and I like loved it, but I could never get to it on purpose. And there's just like a lot of weird kind of mystical stuff about the forest that's kind of like that.
Huh.
Well, it's interesting because you seem like a contemplative person, and your music is also, I think, one where you could sit with your music, you know. And I feel like your music is. It's very thoughtful, but it also, I think, puts the listener in a position to do some of that thinking for themselves. And so I wonder how much of that experience then throughout your childhood is one of not isolation per se, but you know, you didn't have a ton of people around you. And so what was the you know, your mind, the life of a child like when you were coming up?
Yeah, I think that is a really interesting question. I think about that all the time, actually, because like I had dial-up internet forever, so like I couldn't. Everyone was like on MySpace and like sharing music and like new music and stuff, and I just like had my dad's CD collection and no internet, and I was in the woods, and
you had no internet.
I mean, I had.
That's basically
no internet.
Internet.
Yeah, it's like,
fam, there was a time. Okay, like,
when was that?
Not remember, I know, but
more recent. Like, they don't even have like cable internet in Wendell yet. The town just voted to like postpone it for another couple of years because everyone that lives there is like, "What's that for? We don't need it."
Yes.
And then all their kids come home to visit, and they're like, "What's going on? Like, my phone's not working." Like, but yeah, so it's very, yeah, secluded. I think. That had a lot to do with like figuring out music, especially because it became something that I kind of had to figure out on my own in a lot of respects. I had a lot of really awesome saxophone teachers growing up, but other than that, I kind of taught myself everything. And
was that your first instrument? Was the saxophone?
Yeah, I started playing when I was 10.
And how did that come about? Who put the horn into your hands, I guess?
Kind of my mom. I was just like very shy, and I wasn't really doing anything outside of school. And my mom, I remember one day, was like, "You got to do something." Like, what? Like, as I didn't play sports, you know, I didn't, all the other kids were like on Little League or whatever. And so I just kind of randomly picked the saxophone. I think it had something to do with Lisa Simpson. I was really into The Simpsons, and like the episodes where she plays the horn is like are always really beautiful. And
it's
so,
the coolest instrument. I mean, I think that like,
it is. Yeah, I really that and so. The trumpet.
Yeah,
true.
Mm-hmm. Growing up, it doesn't really feel like that. All these other kids like play electric guitar, and you're like, oh, crap, I'm like a nerd. I'm playing.
You're in band,
right? Exactly. Yeah. But I'm like, why don't I play bass? I wish I played bass. But yeah, that's how I started playing saxophone, and then I had teachers just for saxophone growing up, and then yeah.
And then you were self-taught, and so what were the other? How did that begin to work? How did you have access to other instruments, and what are some of the first other instruments you began to tinker with?
Yeah, my family had a piano in the house that they still have. It's like my favorite instrument in the world. It's like this horribly detuned old piano, but it just feels like so perfect on the keys, like the weight of the keys. And there's something very nostalgic. It's probably just for me, but if I played it for someone else, they'd be like, "That sounds a little off." But so I would learn. I really started playing piano because I wanted to learn all these Stevie Wonder songs. I started going to a charter school in middle school. That's like a charter public performance school thing in Massachusetts, and all the teachers there just I don't know. They were into old soul music, which was like perfect for me because that was the only music I was really like. Exposed to as a kid. So yeah, I was really excited to start like learning Stevie Wonder songs and these different kinds of Ray Charles and only music by blind people.
That's an important genre.
But when did you discover, you know, your own music?
I didn't start writing anything.
Or like where you start listening to like other people. I guess more contemporary.
Or hip hop.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, not till like...
Right, okay. Right. When did you start listening to rap? No,
no, yeah.
Kind
of. I mean, but like, that wasn't exactly, but...
But
yeah,
also,
exactly.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, probably not really. I didn't really get into rap until like high school. I got super into like Outkast and Lil Wayne and Odd Future was popping up around then. I was really excited about like young people being able to like start those kinds of movements on their own. And
but did you get internet finally? How did you find these people?
Yeah, I finally made some friends that had internet, so I would just stay at their houses and be like, oh my god, there's so much stuff out there in the world.
You got a lot of catching up to do.
I feel like there's whole gaps I have. Like people will be like, oh, remember when this happened? They'll be like, no, what
we didn't get that yet.
Right, exactly. I think I saw that at Hot Topic one time, but I didn't know what it was.
You kind of lived off the grid.
Yeah,
that's kind of crazy.
Yeah,
I'm glad I like can, you know, talk to people.
Like have social skills. Yeah,
I'm not gonna say it like that.
Yeah,
very grateful.
Well, when you started to listen to that music, that's a great moment in hip hop. I mean, when
right, especially Odd Future, yeah,
is incredible. Is that when you began to feel propelled to make your own music? Then,
I had already been writing songs in a lot of different ways at that time. I started writing songs when I was like 13 that were more just kind of like songwritery or and I would just kind of like mess around making like jazz changes and stuff on piano. And then yeah, when I got into rap stuff, me and my friends just started hanging out and like recording little rap songs and making beats together, and it was cool because it kind of introduced this new way for me to use all this knowledge I had about, you know, jazz music and music theory and composition in a way that was exciting to me as a teenager at the time. That wasn't just like, hey, these old people like when you play this old jazz standard. It was like, oh no, like this is something that makes me like want to like jump around and like, but it's still tied to that stuff I had been learning as a kid.
Mm-hmm. So in high school, were you part of like a rap crew? Were you out in the school rhyming?
Yeah, we it was just like a bunch of fucking weird kids that were hanging out that were trying to learn how to rap and make beats together. We just kind of like we'd make songs and mixtapes and skateboards and hoodies and whatever. We were like, we're going to be like cool, like rap teenage kids. And we're
that
punks.
Is a very odd future.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's of that moment, I guess.
Yeah.
Too.
Right.
Yeah.
That was definitely the
zone. In Wendell,
we were
in the woods.
Right. No, I had to drive, you know, 45 minutes to Amherst. I had to drive an hour to school. But.
And then you just stay out there a lot then.
Right, exactly. Just like stay the night somewhere.
That's kind of not dissimilar from Chicago kids who have to travel an hour and a half.
Right, from the suburbs or whatever.
Yeah,
right. To the suburbs.
Or from the south side to like the
north side.
North side or whatever.
True.
Yeah.
So what was your crew? Did you have a crew name?
Yeah, it was called Dark World. It was like a bunch of like, we were just like, we're such punks and, you know.
Whenever. I like that, Dark World.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
No, not at all.
Yeah, no, I don't really see a lot of those guys anymore. But that's how it started. Yeah, we were making songs together.
But I feel like I can see that, I can trace that like lineage, you know, in his music. Like where you say you start with rap and soul and then go to hip hop, you know?
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Did you, at what point in high school did you at all feel like you were going to do this for a career at that point, or did that come later?
Yeah, I guess towards on the later end of high school, we started, you know, doing little tours around the Northeast.
Oh, you guys were popping.
Yeah, we were doing stuff. I mean, like,
Dark World was
out here
taking over.
I mean, not really like that. We were just like playing little basement shows and driving around different cities and, you know, trying to make shit happen.
How many of y'all were there?
There were a lot. But yeah, only a few of us would go on a tour at a time. It would just be like, I would rap and we'd do like drums and bass and tracks. And
you were emceeing.
Yeah. And those were fun. Those were fun.
Want
shows.
To spit a rhyme
from the day?
My name is Sen. And no, they were all
they were rapping in 1982.
They were terrible songs. Terrible, terrible songs.
but the scene was kind of like a DIY.
Yeah, totally. Like
young person, Massachusetts and other state. Scene
for sure. Yeah. We had all been in like punk bands before that, right. And making different music, and so it was just like
it was that
kept
spirit.
That energy, but just kind of like with a new genre we were trying out, I guess.
Well, I mean, that's the interesting thing about Odd Future too, is that they are in the genre of, I guess, hip-hop, I guess,
right,
but certainly seem to have that punk mentality, which is also a hip-hop mentality, but
right, you know, they're all like rock stars, you know, everyone compares rappers to rock stars.
Yeah. but particularly like punk rockers.
Wait, because the essence of punk rock and why it came to be, you know, you can draw parallels.
True.
The attitude, yeah, the attitude
absolutely.
Translates really well. I feel like I saw a tweet once that was like, I saw a tweet once that was like punk and rap, it's like a Venn diagram in the middle where they meet up is like, fuck the cops.
Yeah. I feel like grime is like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The same like
spirit.
Spirit. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's very real.
Yeah.
So you on the road then, I mean, that was an opportunity to obviously get some footing and some confidence maybe as a performer, I'd imagine.
Yeah, totally.
How old were you?
I was 17.
Okay. So before college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. That was all going on, yeah, like between 16 and 19. And yeah, after high school, I knew I didn't want to go to college. I mean, I applied to a few, but it just didn't really make sense to me. Like, I knew I wanted to do music, whatever kind it was. And like, I felt like if I was going to go to college, it should be for like, you know, something that's going to make some money and not something that's going to rob me and then make me unemployable.
Right, yeah.
Double like, rob you. Got
especially
a degree
doing
in music.
Something you're already doing. I mean,
yeah,
if you're already
don't need,
at that
like,
point.
Real world, you know, experience or whatever.
For sure, yeah. And I was just having fun with my friends. So, yeah, I just kept doing that after high school. And then...
How'd you end up here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And then, yeah, when I was... maybe I had turned 20 and I moved to Chicago... During the polar vortex.
Oh,
was that like 2014 maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A rough time to come.
There was a polar vortex before that too, right?
I think that was where that terminology began.
I think so, yeah. I remember
like
it was like
polar and vortex. Before it was just like, yeah, Chicago winter.
Chicago.
I thought there was one in 2011.
Could have been.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a good term. I understand why they made it. It's like super popular.
Like hell on earth.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a very like hashtagable like polar vortex.
Well,
two.
Other than the weather, what brought you?
I moved out here to be with my girlfriend at the time, actually, and just I was looking for a change, and she was going to school out here, and I was going to move to New York and just like, I don't know,
do that artist thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really relieved that I didn't. But
so are we.
Yeah. Thanks. No offense to New Yorkers. But yeah, I don't think they
give a fuck.
Right.
But, you know,
I mean, yeah, they're probably like, they're from God.
It's a fine island of millionaires.
I love New York.
It's fine. Yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah, you love New York.
I love New York.
Yeah.
They don't need another kid from Massachusetts moving down there, you know.
Right, yeah. Trying to play music.
Yeah.
With a saxophone.
Right.
Yeah.
Who do they think he is?
Yeah.
No, so yeah, I moved here, and it's funny, we were talking about, you know, being secluded and how that affects music and stuff. And I've been thinking a lot about how when I got here, it was like the first time I was making music like away from the crew, you know, and I like didn't know anybody out here. So I was just like holed up in my like loft. I lived in this bedroom without a ceiling and just like one of those, you know.
Bedroom without a ceiling? No, I don't know. That sounds like you were homeless, by the way. My man. Your bedroom without a ceiling.
He's living under a viaduct.
No, it had like a...
Bedroom without a ceiling.
There was
some
a ceiling in the apartment.
The park.
It was a tarp.
What?
It was a tarp.
No, no. It, like the walls were made of cardboard.
Wait, where
basically,
did you live?
It was like in Wicker. It was like
did
a...
Did you live with Kari?
In the actual park.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I remember that crib.
That was...
Is that the one next to Belmont?
Army? Yeah, right above it. I lived
honestly,
there before
though,
Kari. All right.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Okay, I've been there when Kari lived there. But I used to do this playlist for the hundreds, and I put you on it in like 2015.
Really?
Yeah.
Why didn't you tell me that before?
Tarp, been known.
You didn't have like a face, and I was just like, oh, send more to me.
We could have been friends.
It's okay. I've been knowing.
Exactly.
Wow. I've been
hip. Yeah. Tarp got the early scoops.
Super rare.
But, yeah, no.
So you're living in an apartment in Wicker Park.
Allegedly.
Yeah, it was an apartment. Yeah,
absolutely does not sound like one, and that's fine. I mean, people.
But I've been there, and it exists. It has four walls, just maybe not as many walls inside.
Right.
I'm
four walls.
Confused, but
I'm like, why don't we go to your place?
But you don't really know anyone. You're beginning, and then that leads you to what? That practice of making music.
Yeah, so I just had a microphone, little audio box USB thing in my computer, saxophone, and I was just starting to make stuff by myself because I didn't really know anyone else, and I was, you know, still pretty shy as a person. Generally, I'm not really like going out and like partying and meeting people. I never really have been, so I was just kind of holed up in there for a long time, and I think that really helped me just kind of figure out what I wanted to hear, what I'd like to be listening to, and it helped the music be a lot more, you know, personal and true to myself, which was a really important step. But it's interesting. Like, I've been thinking about how that probably wouldn't have happened if I was just, like, with all my boys and, like, we were making, like, party music or something.
Well, does that lead to your... Is your
what
first project... What
would send party music sound like?
I know, right? Isn't that weird to imagine? It's awkward.
Awkward party music?
It's awkward.
No, I feel like it'd be about, like, getting, like preparing for a really good night's sleep. You know what I mean? It's like that, the turn up right before maybe you take a bath with candles or something
like
that.
Or it's like about espresso.
That's amazing.
Like
you
drinking.
Get me, man. That's what I always say about the record is like, it's for when you're alone and you're just taking a bath, having some wine, and it's like post-party, like, settle down music.
I think you're fucking with me, but
no, I'm serious.
Really? I want to talk about the new project. Is that what led to the? Is people watching? Is that the first project that you did here, or does that come later?
People watching. No, I had made a. So when I first moved here, I was I ended up making a record called For Me and Lady that was, it's like a little weirder. It's like kind of more awkward than the new one, but it's
more awkward.
Yeah, now that we're, it's like, I think I was like experimenting a lot with different sounds and trying to figure out, it was just part of that process. And, yeah, no, so that was the first record. And then, after that, I like had a little falling out with my friends back home, and I was just kind of feeling like jaded about stuff. And so the next record I made was like a little EP called It's Late that I was very, again, kind of in a reclusive mode. I just like kind of recorded it all in my bed. I was like,
What years are we in?
It's Late is 2016.
Okay.
So For Me and Lady was probably 2015.
And who are you beginning to meet, if anyone, in a broader community musically or you know, just artistically? Who was beginning to be some of the people that you started to vibe with?
Totally, yeah. When I was, after I put out For Me and Lady, I was like starting to play some shows in Chicago, and I met Namdi Obanaya, who's like a really good friend of mine now and runs the Super Records with me. That ended up being like a crazy like relationship that I treasure very much. And
you guys are of course about to go on tour together, which is really incredible.
Oh, I didn't know
y'all
going together.
Right?
That's dope.
Yeah. I'm going for the second half of his U.S. tour in October.
Yeah, congratulations. Very excited about. Yeah,
thank you
amazing.
Very much.
Yeah.
I'm very stoked.
Yeah.
And
salutes to Namdi. I mean, we want to get him on the pod too.
You should. Yeah, he's the man. Yeah. And he's like more fun to talk to than I am. He's like
pretty good.
Right? You're doing great.
Great.
And one of the things I love about you and I love about your music, I think that, you know, I'm a little more extroverted than Tara, although, you know, if Tara has a beverage or three, like, also we'll talk that shit.
Wow, way to put me on blast.
No, I'm saying if. I said if.
I'm an ambivert. Thank you.
I don't know
ambivert.
What is that?
What's that?
It means you're both. Intro and extra.
I feel that way too.
But I'm more
like a
than
drunk
you.
Avert.
Yeah. This guy.
Okay. Yeah.
But that.
Sorry.
But that. But I
substance avert.
Oh
wow. But I love that you kind of rep for the, you know, not necessarily that you rep for the introvert, but that you know there's a lot of possibilities to be. A person in the world who might be reclusive and also can be public in that same space or in the same body. So
totally.
You're great to talk to. So don't.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I feel much better.
Okay, good. So
there's also a way to make me feel better. Wow.
Wait, did I make you feel bad?
We should all go around and say one like nice thing about each other.
Like shots, but smooth it over. You know?
No, I'm saying like you and I feel like you and I for real like are we can talk. You
yeah,
know,
we have conversations.
No, but we also talk like in the world with people.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
conversation in the world. Yeah.
Anyway.
You guys are, yeah, no, you guys are more natural outside of the booth, I would say. Just
yeah.
as a compliment. I mean, like you work better in the real world, which is a better.
Yeah. That's
but good. You're doing great now, too.
I didn't mean
to. I was like, shots and smooth it over. Like,
oh, my God.
Y'all
oh, no.
Good
we're
this.
Having a bad time.
I'm just good at the shots. So y'all
right,
can do the.
Right. Politicians.
So you meet Namdi.
Yeah, so I met Namdi, and we started making some music together. I was like already a big fan of his when I met him, and that's so funny to think about now. Like that show I met him at, Namdi was there. This dude David Warren, who put out For Me and Lady with me, was there, and Maceo was there, I think. And I was like, it's just weird to think about now. These are all like people I know really well now. And at the time I was like, oh, I'm just like playing this show for a bunch of strangers.
Yeah.
But how do you even get like in tune with playing shows and where to play?
Yeah.
Who to play with?
I just played every show that someone offered me. Like,
but how are people offering you shows even? Just because you were putting music out?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, initially, like I was playing like really, like I worked at a sushi restaurant when I first moved here. And it was run by like this group of Mongolian dudes, and they had like a Mongolian bar that they went to every night afterwards, and that was like my first show in Chicago. They were like, yo, you got like my boy Sen raps, like we got you want to play at the at the bar? And so I went, and the line cook was my DJ, And it was so weird. Like, I was rapping, and they were all, like, doing this kind of Mongolian traditional line dance thing while it was happening. And everyone was just trashed, and the DJ threw up on himself. And I was like, I gotta get out of here, guys. Like, that was the first show. I was like,
That's your first show here.
That's a great
first
show.
I was like, dude, I gotta go. He was like,
that was a good sign. That was an omen.
Right?
I was like, I have to keep doing this.
Right? So
this
people
is,
throw up.
Right.
Themselves?
The life for me.
Right.
And, but yeah, and then I played, yeah, like, you know, East Room and those little, you know, in the circuit. I just kind of played whatever people threw at me. And, you know, you meet people there and they ask you to do other stuff. Sometimes you have a good show. Sometimes you have a really awkward, terrible show. I had one where I came off stage and the guy I was opening for was like, hey, man, looked like you were really going through something up there. I was like, thank you.
How do you react to that?
Yeah. But yeah, just, you know, you got to not be scared to kind of make a fool of yourself and just keep going. And then, yeah, so around the time I put out It's Late, I had met Kaina, actually. Hey, Kaina.
Hey. Kaina's in the studio, not on the microphone.
Yeah, she's
refuses
sitting in the
to
corner.
Really engage in
Do you want some munchies?
This, that's fair.
I'm just watching people watching.
Yeah,
oh, that building?
Zing. Yeah, Kaina is people watching.
Yeah, are you watching people do stuff?
Yeah, no one is fucked yet, though.
Wow. Kaina's giving us a up-to-the-minute update about the
give me an Amber alert when it happens,
right?
Potential physical interactions of some of our neighbors.
Oh,
in our spaceship.
We have a great view from the spaceship.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you met Kaina, who's a lovely person,
the most loveliest of persons.
Okay.
At a show, I actually was going to see Namdi play a solo set. He did this really cool set where he was just playing drums, and he had this kind of backing track like voice of God speaking to him while it was happening. It was really cool. And then Kaina played afterwards, I think, with her band. And that was the first time I'd seen her, and I was like totally blown away. And I was just getting a band together for the first time to open for Bad Bad Not Good. It was the first time. I was like, oh, this is kind of a bigger show than I'm used to. I should try playing with the band. And so I asked Kaina to sing with me, and yeah, we've been making music and hanging out ever since.
Nice.
But...
Well, that's a big show. That Bad, Bad, Not Good show is a big show, right? So you're starting...
They're dope.
They're really dope.
Yeah.
And so at that point, you start to get then bigger looks, and you begin to work with a band and more people.
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely a big step, like just knowing that it was possible to kind of experience that with people on stage with me and kind of like seeing how that felt. I used to just perform with like a drum machine and a saxophone and just do it by myself, which has its own, you know, charm to it for myself. It's kind of fun in a certain way.
It's like lo-fi, you know. I feel like I've seen a lot of people early in their career do that.
Yeah, totally. It's a fun way to, It's a fun way to perform on your own and kind of be, it's like being the maestro.
Self-contained.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you're not relying on anyone else to kind of get certain things right. But no, it's so much more fun with a band. Like, that really was eye-opening for me to just, you know, hear other people's ideas about the music and hear how their take on some part and the grooves being different. It was really exciting.
Well, the band now that you play with, or, you know, it seems to be a real genuine community, too, of friends, of family at this point, it seems, you know, that you're very close with the people you are making stuff with.
Totally, yeah. That's something I really appreciate about Chicago is that it feels like the people that work together are more, it's like your friends first and then your collaborator second, maybe, or you know, are in the scene together second. It's like if the relationship is good, then the whatever you make is going to be good, you know, and so that has to come first. And so, yeah, it's been really smooth, honestly, and, like, just only a pleasure to, like, meet more people making music in Chicago and, you know, try different things, experiment and make recordings and play the shows. And
Well, let's talk because I want to talk about the trip you're about to take, but I want to talk about the project, the latest project, Cannonball. And when did that come out?
Oh shit! Like 3 months ago. I don't even actually remember the date. May 18th.
And so that's like what, like this is like a 9-track record or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like.
Yeah, 9 tracks.
And it is there's a lot happening on that record. I mean, and that's why I said even up top, like it is kind of difficult to I don't know if you classify it, and I don't mean to even have that be a necessity of talking about the music, but I mean, Tara, you do this, you know, damn near daily, is kind of, you know, find ways to talk about music that is difficult to talk about. But you know, what, how do you think of this record, and what are the ways that you talk about it?
I think it's interesting. Yeah, it's definitely a lot of different influences and sounds coming into one thing. So it is kind of a long explanation I feel like I have to give when somebody asks like what the genre is or what kind of music I make. It's like, it's kind of all those things we talked about up to this point. Like, it's the jazz I learned as a kid, it's the songwriting I did as a teenager, it's the, you know, punk music, it's the rap music, it's the indie rock, you know, I mean, it's all the things I did growing up kind of in one package, as cohesive as it can be. Sometimes it's not, but
well, I went to the Empty Bottle show. Mm-hmm. Was that the
release? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great show.
I mean, I listened to the record, but sometimes when you see something live, it's way more, not persuasive, but like
it's a different experience. It sells differently. Yeah.
But
it's a different entry point sometimes too.
Right, but it was just like live as fuck. Like it was like the punk. You know, like when you grow up and you see all the local bands that are really shitty, but they have so much fucking energy.
That it's so,
you
know? Fun. Yeah. That's like a crucial, like, energy.
But it just like reminded me of that, of like being in St. Louis, going to local show. It
Wait a
sucked,
minute, you said the
I
band
was...
sucked?
No. When I was younger, though, you know how much you see, how much local music you like take in, and like 80% of it's trash, you know?
Totally. You don't
but
even
the energy
it.
Is always high, yeah. You know? Like,
yeah.
And it was like that, but the music's good,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But then it's like the indie element, you know? I don't know. There's just like a lot going on. It was really dope, though. And it was packed the fuck out. It was sold out.
Yeah, that was dope. I didn't know that until like that day. I was like, wow, what a crazy blessing. I prayed in the bathroom on the floor. Someone told me that was a good thing to do before a show.
Hmm. Like, how are you sitting on the floor?
Like, you kneel on the floor. You know, I was wearing these nice pants. I was like, I'm going to wear my nice pants. And then someone was like, you got to pray before the show. You know, it's going to help. And I was like, in my nice pants? And they're like, that's the point.
Like, on the floor of the venue?
On the floor in the bathroom. Did I not
say
that?
In the venue.
Yeah, in the venue. Yeah, the Empty Bottle bathroom is nasty.
Ooh, yeah.
Nice, yeah.
I can only imagine.
The floor in any part of the floor in all of the Empty Bottle is not nice.
Yeah, no.
That was my first time there, though. It's a cool spot.
Great venue.
Yeah.
Historic, yeah. Important venue.
Historic,
yeah.
Important venue. They got to work on their bathrooms, so it's okay.
They will not. They will not. They refuse to. It's part of the charm.
It is. It is, actually.
It is quite charming.
You're right. They would ruin it if they had like a really fancy bathroom.
That's part of also what like lent to the experience of your show, was like the venue was just like a really good fit too, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I was.
It all kind of just
there.
Like coalesced.
Totally. That's one of my favorite spots in the city too. Like, it's very like, it's not...
It's like,
you know,
kind of
this
grungy.
Kind
of,
exactly.
And like,
it's not this kind of fancy, done-up spot. And, but the sound is amazing there at the same time. So it's like one of my favorites. But
nah, you were great.
Yeah.
But you were really good.
That show, and then I feel like that the record and the response to the record, I don't know if you feel like it's been a whirlwind, but it seems like this is, it's certainly a breakthrough.
Well, you quit your job at Big Star.
I did. Shout out Big Star.
Yeah.
I still need those free tacos. Yeah, I did. I just quit a couple weeks ago before I went home to visit my family.
Congrats.
Thank you. I mean, you know, I love the people there, and it definitely kept me afloat for a long time. I worked there like 3-4 years.
And you didn't quit out of spite. You quit because you don't necessarily need that job in this moment.
Yeah, it's not even that. Like, if I, yeah, I mean, no, it's more like, you know, I just didn't, it got increasingly difficult to make sure I was putting the right amount of energy into music stuff. Like, you know, yeah, it like definitely
on your feet and stuff. That's, you know, exhausting.
Yeah, for sure. It is definitely a super tiring job. Like, really shout out everyone in service. Oh, that shit is so difficult.
Yeah.
And, but so like, yeah, it just, it was definitely a breakthrough to like put this record out and play the show and, you know, the response to that. So like, it just ended up, you know, every time something good would happen related to the record being released or something, it would come with like a whole new load of responsibilities, and trying to balance that with work. And, you know, they care a lot about, at Big Star, they care a lot about the employees, you know, knowing about the, everything that comes in, passes through the restaurant and stuff like, it's like, you know, you, I couldn't really be slacking at the restaurant or at music. So it turned out I just kind of had to pick something.
Well,
and you didn't pick Big Star? Wow.
I know. I may have fucked up. I'm going to be back there begging for a job in like a year, like, I'm broke.
I really feel like that is not the case. But what has the response been to this record in a short period of time? I mean, I've read, you know, a lot of critical and you know, articles praising this record.
It's been cool. It's definitely, you know, on a much larger scale than I've ever put out music before. So there's just like, in terms of the volume of responses, is very new to me, and it's very, you know, humbling and just kind of crazy to feel on a daily basis. But, and then in terms of like the actual things people have been saying about it, it makes me happy. It's like, people seem to be either happy that there's something new to listen to that they are having trouble describing, or that maybe they were something they were looking for already, either that, or there are people that are like totally baffled by it being like kind of something that's all over the place and doesn't really make any sense, which is also cool. I'm into that response as well. So yeah, I'm just happy to share it with people and see how that response turns out.
And one of the things that has come is this opportunity, you're getting ready to, you know, go overseas to Japan to play a festival.
Yeah.
What is the festival, and how did that come about?
It's a Summer Sonic Festival in Tokyo. It's actually a little outside Tokyo, like around Chiba. And it's like a big festival. I hadn't heard of it until they hit me up, but it's like a, you know, who's playing, like Beck, Chance the Rapper's playing, and Parliament. I'm really excited to see Parliament and Thundercat. Yes, and yeah. But yeah, so I'm going to Japan on the 17th. I'm playing Summer Sonic on the 19th, like in the morning at the Billboard stage, and then hitting like a club date the next night in Daikanyama, which is like a neighborhood close to Shibuya. I feel like more people know what Shibuya is.
Oh, that's like the real hip spot.
Right, you know, Daikanyama is like a little more like a little maybe bougier. It's kind of like... Mm. Fancy, but it's in between Daikanyama and Shibuya, really. So it's,
are you gonna hang out with your brother?
I am gonna hang out with my brother. I just got the okay for him to be like filming stuff there. He's,
oh, that's,
you know,
tight.
A videographer,
family
and,
collab,
exactly. Yeah, we like to make things together. He actually made the Cannonball video for the record. Dope. Yeah, he's the man. So he's gonna meet us out there, help me with my like horrible Japanese, and like we can get around. And what was I saying? Oh yeah, Summer Sonic. So yeah, the next one's at Space Odd on the 20th. It's a club in Daikanyama, and that came about through this booking agency had hit me up, you know, saying that they wanted to work with me, and they had these show offers, and I don't even know. I think we got in some weird argument on the phone. But
in English?
In English, yeah. They're American. They're very much Americans.
Oh, okay.
I won't say the company
Maybe
name.
Maybe that's part of the problem.
Right.
But I don't want to overstate it, but I mean, there is a buzz about your coming and about your record and about you in Japan. This is a real thing, right?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, I feel like, at least from what I can tell, just like on the internet, it's like more people... I get more responses in Japan than I do in America to kind of music stuff and people just talking about it, which is exciting and very cool. I'm kind of psyched to see how that is. I'm not sure. You know what I mean? It's hard to tell if that like translates into like physically being there and there are actually like people there that want to, that like give a fuck at all, or if it's just like people on the internet being like, I like this song, you know?
Oh, I think it'll be both.
I hope so.
How does that feel, given that that is also a kind of home for you?
It's like really kind of scary in some ways, because I feel like a very, even like outside of music, I feel a certain amount of responsibility to Japan and my...
I found it.
What'd you find?
The song I posted of yours.
Is it Layup?
U-Y-U.
U-Y-U. Oh my God, so rare. That's not on any records. I don't even know if that's like...
Tar got these scoops.
Seriously.
I'm going to find the write-up I did. I was finding the playlist on my SoundCloud.
Oh my God, I probably read it and just didn't know it was you. I was probably like, oh my God, someone wrote about my song. Like, wow.
Anyway.
That's amazing.
That's why I was silent, because I was looking for it. Okay, I'm done now.
Life is like
digging
a hydron.
Yeah,
got to. Pockets is deep.
That's so cool. What was I saying?
About... you know, the
response
becoming,
in Japan.
Yeah, and, oh. in Japan specifically.
Yeah. So, like, it definitely, I feel like connected and disconnected at the same time to my, like, roots in Japan, in a sense that, you know, I have always come back to it as something that I have to, like, reimmerse myself in and try to appreciate all of its complexities and culture in different ways. And so it feels like for it to be reaching people in Japan is like, I'm so excited about it, and it is like, again, very humbling and kind of like just crazy to think about people on the other side of the planet listening to something you made like in your bedroom. And at the same time, I feel a certain amount of responsibility to just kind of express this is what I pray for before the shows, to like be able to communicate love to them in person. And because there's nothing that makes you feel that way, for myself at least, performing music and singing your own songs and giving that part of yourself to people in recordings and, you know, in performances. So I just hope that when I'm over there, I'm able to kind of like really let them feel what I'm feeling from them, which is like love and openness.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. Yeah.
How does, you know, how does your culture appear manifest in your music?
Growing up, there have been like a few songs I've made in Japanese that, I mean, are kind of the obvious moments where it's like, hey, I'm Japanese. Like, mm-hmm. This is a part of who I am. But I think even in the songs in English, it's definitely, it's very personal music. So even if I'm not saying like, hey, I feel this way about this thing that happened in my life because I'm, you know, Asian American or I'm half Japanese, it's like you just have to take that into account when you're listening to anyone's music. Not that you should be like, oh, hey, this is like by you know, half Filipino artist, like, so I have to think about that the whole time. But it's like, it's part of the dialogue, and it's part of the conversation in terms of lineage and changes in culture and like worldwide, you know. So I mean, I guess it affects every part of what I do, even if it's not outspoken like that.
And were you raised religious? You've mentioned prayer now a few times. Is that come from upbringing?
No, not really. My parents are spiritual, I would say, but not, you know, they're not like specifically religious in any way. I went to like Jesus camp a couple times as a kid, and that was like where I learned a lot about the Bible and stuff like that. But I feel similarly to my parents, is that it's not really like I'm, you know, praying to Jesus or someone in particular. It's more just accepting that there's something larger than yourself and surrendering to it. And, you know, when you ask that like higher power for something, you know, obviously you have to give it something in return. So just kind of understanding that dynamic and living your life accordingly is something that has become important to me only really in the past year or so, I kind of became more in touch with that part of what I was feeling.
And what was the shift? I mean,
I don't know. I just, I guess I was having a hard time with something, and I had a couple friends who were recommending that I try praying, and it really felt crazy. And like, sometimes when you're like praying and it really feels like good and like it's like really like outside of yourself and working, it feels like maybe you're just like manic right now. Like maybe that's not like that's not a higher power, it's just like your brain is like frying. But I think sometimes when it's right, you can tell, and that feeling is something I've only recently been able to experience, and I feel really grateful for it.
It's kind of like meditation, I feel like.
Absolutely. Yeah. It came into my life around the same time, actually.
So too. You do both.
Yeah. And that has also really helped. Although, mm-hmm. Meditation feels like... meditation feels like when you do, like, you, like, go grocery shopping and you get the goods and you chop it all up and you make the... You, like, spend the time making this meal.
Mm-hmm.
And prayer feels like when someone, like, cooks you a home-cooked dinner or something. They're both, like, really satisfying in different ways, but I feel like there's a...
Meditation something is more involved.
Yeah, totally. It feels more like, for me at least, like, something I give to myself. And I'm like, hell yeah, like, I did that
it's
for
more
myself.
More peace of mind.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm going to focus my energy and make this... peace happen for myself, and prayer is like, help me, like, I need help.
True.
Santa's a beautiful dude, isn't he?
Yeah, that was very nice, like, thought process for the last 3 minutes.
I also, I want the Sen concert and also spiritual retreat.
Also, I just want to shirt this as like pray and meditate, you know?
Good idea.
That's like your merch.
That's a good idea.
But also, I might get that tattooed because,
okay, if you get it tatted, I'll give you a cut of the shirt.
We're working out business deals.
Working out. Yeah, my people will talk to your people.
Okay, wow. My people is me, so just let me know.
Me too.
For a second, I thought it was just a bunch of like Jewish lawyers. So I'm glad that's not what y'all
Kaina,
meant.
Right. Kaina.
So what are you? What are you working on now?
Sorry, I'm chewing my munchies.
No, it's good.
That's what I'm working on now.
Finishing this bag. I'm in my bag on this one.
Oh my God. I'm in my bag.
Oh no. I've been making a lot of instrumental music. I'm not sure where that'll go.
Maybe a Young Noodle Cup album.
What's a Noodle Cup album?
Young Noodle Cup is Tara's AKA. That's her rap alias.
Oh my God. Yeah. Hey, if you need
some
beats.
She's working on the mixtape. Listen, let's go.
Hey, I'm going to send you an email. It's like fire beats. Like
in the, just
lease
in the subject
for $50.
Line.
Like one, today only special deal. Lease my beats. I like that name, Young Noodle
Thank
Cup.
Thank you. Took a lot of thought. And by that, it took no thought. It just stuck.
It took one noodle cup.
and she was sold.
Right.
She's probably old by now, to be honest. You know?
No, you were the first one there. You own that name.
Okay.
I'm working on Kaina's new project, which I'm really excited about.
Hey.
You work on a lot of people's stuff.
Yeah, I try to. I mean, just like friends. It's like people that are...
You were on Saba's record, of course.
You know?
Joseph. I'm not on Saba's record.
My bad.
I'm not on Saba.
You
I might just let that slide.
Yeah. My bad.
Yeah. No, I produce a lot for Joseph and Kaina and work with different people like Kari and...
Oh, you snapped on Kari's
Thank
stuff.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just people that are... close to me that I have good relationships with that like I can't really like just get an email from someone that's like, hey, like work on this thing with me, and I'm like, I don't know you, I don't know if
it's that connection.
Totally. It's not even like I'm like I don't want to work with you, it's just like it would be kind of weird if I just like decided what your music sounded like not knowing who you are, and then you just had to roll with it. But yeah, so I'm really excited about Kaina's new stuff. We're working on a bunch of new songs. Joseph's got new stuff. Yeah, I'm excited for all my friends. But mostly, yeah, that's what I'm working on. Basically other people's stuff and getting the live performance prepared for Japan and the tour in October.
Right. Great. And where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on, you know, you can find my music on all your streaming services, Spotify, Apple Music. Actually, I don't really know how Tidal works. I don't know if it's on Tidal.
Tidal's kind of a mystery to me,
too. It's a total mystery, yeah. It's like a different universe. I don't know.
Of exclusivity that
I don't
understand. But
it might be on Tidal.
It might be. don't know if you're getting the check. But
yeah, right. If people want to buy, you know, physical copies of the record, Cannonball's on Bandcamp, where you can buy vinyl, tape, CDs, and then, you know, for the SoundCloud people out there, who I stay loyal to, the songs are all up there. And then basically just search Sen Morimoto in, you know, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, Bandcamp, all the things.
And before we get out of here, let's talk a little about the label and what you guys are doing and what the plan for it is. Because this is a local, independent, you know, it's a handful of people, maybe less at this point,
yeah,
who are running this label that is producing records that are having, you know, some wide-reaching, you know, listening audiences.
Totally, yeah. I just became part of Super Records after we released Cannonball. Yeah, basically right now, like me, Glenn, who helped me with the release of Cannonball and runs a lot of logistical work for Super. He's also like an incredibly talented guitarist and composer, and Namdi, who, you know, is the man. And the three of us are working together on, you know, just trying to find music in Chicago that we're really excited about in terms of, you know, pushing the boundaries of what can be not just popular music, but like music that young people want to enjoy and can, like, it can be a part of their lives and isn't just like, you know, the same song being recycled through things. We're looking for artists with, you know, something different to bring to the table. And it's been really exciting to be a part of that process for the first time. Like, I didn't even, they kind of surprised me with that offer to be a part of the label and do that with them. And I had never even considered doing that kind of work, but it's been like really enjoyable to be going to shows and listening to records and trying to like figure out ways to really push new sounds into the forefront of what people are listening to. And yeah, I'm really grateful for that opportunity too.
That's dope.
Yeah, it's really exciting. All the success, man. And you know, we, before you guys hit the road, you know, we would love to get Namdi on and talk more about the label and just excited for everything that you're doing and everything that you know is in the future for you.
Hell yeah, so. I'll let him know. Yeah. I bet he'd love to come down here.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for being with us today, man.
No, thank you guys. It was such a pleasant time, and this ginger ale has really helped me loosen up a little bit.
Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the Corner Store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the Corner Store at cornerstore_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the Corner Store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.